Hey, Ella, how are you?
Am not kidding when I say I don't know the last time I was this excited for an episode. Like,
Come
we're
on.
not gonna have
You're
enough
saying that
time.
just to be nice. You're just
I'm
saying
not,
that to be nice.
nobody in whoever knows me has ever said I say anything to be nice. That is not my reputation or my ethos. But I will say that I know that we won't have enough time to cover anything, everything. So I do want to get started because there's
Do it.
so much even beyond what we briefly discussed that I'm so excited. So to
Yeah,
kick this
sorry.
off,
Sorry for my delay. Sorry about that.
it's all good. But to kick this off, I want to start by asking what I ask every podcast guest, which is, who are you? How do we know each other? And where can people find you online?
Thank you. I am Rudy Salla. I am a gosh. I don't know. I guess I'm a multi-hyphenate, but the first and foremost, I'm a practicing attorney. I work at a large international law firm. I've been practicing law for over 20 years, and the area of law that I practice in, which is absolutely relevant to this discussion, is infrastructure finance. Which is a kind of even that doesn't sound sexy, but it's a sexier way of saying I do municipal bonds because that's most of what I do. Is I help local governments finance pretty much all the stuff that we use and live in. I'm also a writer. I teach at Chapman Law. I teach a course how to be a deal lawyer, occasional actor, whenever I can get a role, usually in some kind of student film or horror films or something. And I am a native Southern Californian. I'm a pretty active board member on went to the similar schools. I went to Servite, you went to Rosary, and that automatically makes us brother and sister. And we are both from North Orange County, which is awesome. I understand you're also from the Buena Park, Fullerton area, which is where I grew up. I recently ran into one of your close friends at a meetup, a career meetup, which was really awesome. How people can find me. I think the best way to find me, and if you find this episode interesting, is on Good Is in the Details podcast. If that wasn't clear, I'm also a podcaster, but Good Is in the Details podcast. I'm a primary co-host there. I also write for Forbes.com. So if you just type in Rudy Salo Forbes, I will pop up there. LinkedIn, I'm pretty active there. I'm just Rudy Salo and Instagram and yada, yada, yada.
I love that. That was a really beautiful bio.
Thank you.
I will make sure to link all of that into the show notes. So anybody who wants to find them really quickly can just look at the about section and click away and find you. I have to know, you piqued my curiosity. Who was the mutual friend that you ran into? That is so wonderful. I'm so happy. And I will say I appreciate I really do. The bigger my world gets as I travel around the world, it is insane how I went to such a very small high school. So just a little bit of context for anybody who's unaware of the high schools that you mentioned, Rosary and Servite. My graduating class was 172 women. And then going to Chapman University, my graduating class was about 1250. And so people from Orange County, I'm like, how is this small little nook just have so many great connections, and I love it. And the way that you and I connect was also through a Rosary graduate, your co-host on Good Is in the Details, Gwendolyn Dulski. So it's a really wonderful, beautiful, small world. And I think what's cool is some of the shared experiences, even if they didn't happen at the exact same time. That's always really fun to reminisce on. And where I was excited to talk to you on the subject of infrastructure specifically, because if we start talking about finance and municipal bonds, that could be a whole nother episode that I would love to talk about. Being in Dallas, which is it's a hot topic here.
Sure.
But looking at, I know that one of the things that we originally connected upon when we first spoke was about public transportation and the transformation of public transportation. Being in Southern California, growing up there, public transportation just hasn't been figured out the way that we see Europe has it on lockdown, I would say. But even a city like San Francisco or the Bay Area as a whole, we look at Chicago, we look at, of course, New York, and all of these other big metropolitan areas have a really great system. They're not all the same. I think they're relevant to the communities, to the structure of the cities. And yet Southern California, from my perspective, has not quite locked down the public transportation system quite yet. And when I was going to this high school, which was a private high school, which meant we didn't have school buses the way that other public schools might, I was one of, if not the only student in all 4 years that was using public transportation to get to and from school. And it was not an easy feat. I mean, I had to wake up at 4:30 in the morning to get onto the bus at 5:45, to get onto the bus, be at the bus stop on the bus by 5:45, just to get dropped off and then have to walk the 2 miles up Acacia to get to the high school to be in the classroom by my first zero period at 7:50 or whatever that was. So I'm waking up at 4:30 just to get to class, and then same going home, right? I'm missing that 3 o'clock bus because school got out at 3 o'clock and I didn't make it down to the stop in time. So I'm taking the 4:30 with whatever it was. I'm getting home around 5:45 p.m. So it was just not necessarily the most convenient. And I get why a lot of students wouldn't participate in it. And then you add, of course, the social aspect of public transportation. And what I wanted to talk was a little bit about your journey, what appealed to you, where after your high school experience, you ended up falling into an infrastructure finance type of role within the context of law.
Yeah, great questions. And there's a lot to unpack there. And I'll try to unpack it in the most interesting way possible. So I'll start with me individually. I too use the bus a lot going to Servite, definitely on the way home for several years until I had some friends who lived by me that had cars, and I would sometimes get rides from them until I was able to get my own car as well. I grew up with a grandmother who didn't speak English when she came to the United States. She didn't know how to drive in the country that she used to live in. And when she immigrated here, she also didn't learn how to drive, but she did learn English. And one of the first things that she did after she learned English was to teach herself how to get around on a bus. So interestingly enough, my grandmother instilled in me at a very, very, very young age, you don't need a car. Here in this country, there are buses, and as long as you learn the system. And so knowing where you grew up and where I grew up, there was the 29, which was the bus that took Beach Boulevard all the way down to Huntington Beach. And I pretty much considered, you know, part of my youth growing up at Huntington Beach, because I was able to take the bus there. I also took the bus to the Brea Mall a lot with my grandmother. Eventually wound up working at the Brea Mall. So it was instilled in me at a very young age to that, you know, you didn't have to use a car. Fast forward, I go to college. My last 2 years of college I spent at UCLA, I didn't have a car. You know, Westwood Village, you walk around. It's a very big walking city. It was a wonderful experience. When I go to law school at Georgetown in DC, also didn't have a car. It's also a city that has better metro than we have here. It had here in Los Angeles. Los Angeles has made a lot of strides there. So I was obsessed with this at a very young age about getting around without a car. And when I was in law school, I had one path that I wanted to go down. World events pushed me into another path, and I decided to go into local government law. Spent the first couple of years doing general local government law, and then wound up in local government finance. And very quickly, early on, got some wonderful experience. Used to do sports stadiums. Used to do a lot in the education space. Still do a fair amount in the education space. But I knew that my passion was for transportation. Wasn't really getting the work that I wanted to get. I got some work, and that kind of conflicted me out of other work. And so I needed to kind of resurrect, like a phoenix. Like, hey, who am I? What am I passionate about? What do I really care about? What do I want to talk about and work on for the rest of my life? And I dedicated that to being transportation. Started going on to a lot of podcasts, started expressing a lot of my ideas about the future of transportation, the future of autonomous vehicles, the future of infrastructure, the future of transportation systems. That led to the contributor position at Forbes. And I've kind of used that to explain my policy objectives and my thinking about the future of transportation. And I've now I think like I'm a thought leader, I suppose, on transportation, both transportation finance, the perils of different approaches to transportation. And it's been great and I love it. And I want to spend the latter half of my career as an attorney really focusing on transportation and different ways to finance infrastructure systems. You know, as to your other kind of question about why is Los Angeles different as compared to all these other cities, I actually have the answer to that. I don't know if you want me to speak to that now or at another point, but there is a very, very interesting answer. It took me a long time to learn the answer to that question is, why is LA the way it is?
You have to tell me. I need to know. That might change the direction of the conversation.
Okay. From my research, and not just from my own, but from others as well, and this is from my reading, Los Angeles is spread out because of trains and train systems. Huh? What craziness did this dude just say? I thought it's because of cars. No. You see, back in the day, back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, there used to be these real estate development companies. And these real estate development companies actually owned the trolley system, the Pacific Electric Railway. And they had these train lines go all over Southern California, San Bernardino, Riverside, I mean, you know, Palos Verdes, all this place. And they were like, hey, come here to Southern California. We have massive amounts of land and space to develop in. And we have these trains to move you around. So LA is this spread out area because of the initial train system that was here. Lo and behold, the 40s, the 50s, cars become a lot cheaper with Ford's Model T and other kinds of options. People start having cars, the freedom of the car, the dependency of the car, the independence of the car. And the car trumped the Pacific Railway system, which by that time, I forgot the exact history of it, but it did eventually get taken over and became kind of a public utility, went from the private developers over to the public side. And it got taken away. The people just like, hey, we don't want this train system anymore. We want to put all of our funding and focus solely on the personal vehicle as our number one way of getting around Los Angeles. You can imagine after everything being spread out and they had these trains and then you have these cars, you can only build so many roads, and as cars get cheaper and more people are driving the cars, traffic becomes a major problem. Smog becomes a major problem. And then in the 70s, when you had the gas embargoes, the oil embargoes, and people actually literally couldn't get around, they're like, okay, wait a minute, this isn't going to work. We need to build out other options so we aren't so car dependent. Lo and behold, the California legislature did this whole sales tax thing, and then these train systems, these newer train systems like LA Metro, San Diego system, BART, and all these other systems really start coming about in the 1970s as a result of world events and climate and traffic and everything like that. But I hope that was a fascinating answer, because I find that answer very fascinating.
I do too, and I do think it makes sense. I don't think for anybody who has commuted in Los Angeles for a longer period of time, an extended period of time, would be surprised by that answer, especially when you do look at all the different pockets of, we'll say, counties, to be overbroad. Sure. And I think that what is fascinating is the cycle of, okay, we're going to go from trains to personal vehicles back to prioritizing trains. When we look ahead, right, and look at what the development will be in the future as the communities keep expanding, and that clear distinction, we'll say, between Orange County, LA, San Bernardino, IE, and San Diego gets a little bit blended with the population growing and growing, how might the development of the infrastructure transform looking forward with a lot more cars on the, well, a lot more people, we'll say. I won't assume more cars on the road, because I'll correct myself there. I recently, in 2021, made the decision to go carless. So when I relocated from Southern California, I was commuting every day because I had a field type of role where I'm going to events and I'm going to different client meetings. I was on the road at least probably 30 hours a week, if not longer, because I'm going back and forth. Yeah, it was really rough.
Unbelievable.
And my And my parents, they commuted 2 hours each way, at least on a good day, 2 hours each way, my entire childhood. So I saw them, you know, leaving early in the morning. That's part of the reason why I had to take the bus to school, because they had to go commute to their jobs. My mother worked in San Diego. My dad worked in Los Angeles. We lived in Orange County. And so they're commuting 2 hours their way. And then they come home in a really grumpy, bad mood. And I noticed the toll that the traffic was taking on me. And so when I relocated to Dallas, I left my car behind. I thought I was going to get a new car here. And then I realized I had this newfound life of not wanting and needing a car. I live in a very wonderful area where I have a grocery walking distance, I have a bar walking distance, I have everything I need walking distance, restaurants and so forth. Do I really need a car? I had a rental car, it didn't move. And then I was like, okay, if I don't need this rental car, do I really need to get a car? So I've been living car free for almost 3 years. And people look at me sideways when I say that. They think I'm crazy because I don't, Dallas is similar to Los Angeles in the way that it was kind of built in a particular way that might not be as effective for the current population, but people think I'm crazy that I don't have a car. I love it. I'm happier. I'm like more, it's so much stress off of my back. Now, I will say a big caveat to that, of course, is that that would not have been possible in my last role where I'm going from A to B all the way to JKL throughout the day and hitting 12 different meetings in a day. That just wouldn't be feasible without a personal vehicle. But looking at, especially post-pandemic, what are some of the transformations that we might see, especially within the context of electric vehicles, which is a really hot topic from a policy standpoint within transportation?
Yeah, first of all, kudos to going car free. I did that for, there was a brief period of time in the late 2000s where I didn't have a car for about 9 to 10 months. I liked it. I lived less than 1 mile from the end of the Green Line, which is, you know, back then it was called the train to nowhere. I guess Redondo Beach in Norwalk is considered nowhere. But I tried it for like a year, worked out, but then I just, at that point, my career started to be like, I had to go out and visit clients. I had to go here. I kind of had to go there. So, but kudos to you. I mean, that's awesome. I think that's a wonderful thing to do. Dare I say all those other multi-hyphenates, right? The teaching, the writing, the sometimes acting, the sometimes this, the podcasting, everything. I was able to do that because, and my very first Forbes article was about this, was I used to take for about 7 years, I was primarily using buses and trains to commute to and from work. And I had a smartphone. And the evolution of technology and delegating, right? Delegating the driving to somebody else. I've come up with a concept of that's called smart multitasking. Somebody drives, it takes me about an hour to get to work, and I get to do other things. I can do some work, I can write, I can take classes, I can do everything, make me a better person. And sure, there's great things from commuting as well. Yes, traffic is terrible. And yes, my dad did the 2 hour commute, and he was a very, 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 very grumpy man. But, you know, these days with podcasts, these days with listening to audiobooks, classes, there's so many more options these days, even while you're commuting. I still think that delegating the driving to somebody else makes you a better person, physically fit. I do think that there are a lot of fitness and health benefits because you're just going to do more walking when you're taking public transportation. And so I'm a big advocate for public transportation. As for the future of transportation, yes, electric vehicles, obviously President Biden, a big thing with the Infrastructure Act as well as the Inflation Reduction Act was they want to have, you know, 500,000 electric vehicle charging stations throughout the United States by 2030. Hopefully that happens because these days, you know, electric vehicle owners, they're just not here in California, right? It's a little bit different. We've had electric vehicles for a while. We have more charging stations. It's not as cold here, but a lot of people that got the tax credits and are getting electric vehicles and they're living with their electric vehicles for their first winter are having a lot of pain points because electric vehicles, you know, they get cold and it's hard to charge up that battery, and the bat in order to keep your car warmer, it takes up more battery. And so you're at the charging station more, but oh my God, there's a whole bunch of other people at the charging station. And oh boy, there's so much snow. The charging station's going down. So a lot of infrastructure needs to be built in order to make electric vehicles more ubiquitous beyond places like warm places like Southern California. Interestingly enough, Florida is a big electric vehicle state too, because it's warmer and they've been doing some interesting incentives there as well. I do think that the future, it's interesting. I'm a big believer in electric vehicles. Obviously, I care about the climate. It's a big passion of mine. Here's the thing, though. An electric vehicle, while clean, is still a personal vehicle. Okay, so we're still talking a car on a road. Also, what people don't realize, unless you've been reading Rudy Salo and Forbes for the last several many years or listening to me on podcasts, when you electric vehicle does not pay gas tax. Okay, it's the whole point. Hey, of course we don't pay gas tax, right? I bought an electric vehicle so I could charge my car and I could save some money on gas. The primary way of funding transportation and most infrastructure, a lot of infrastructure projects in the United States, comes from the gas tax. So as cars are becoming more and more fuel efficient, yay, that's awesome, the funding portion that comes from that fuel tax drops. So there's less money to build new infrastructure, new train systems, new roads, new options. So what they do in Texas, I believe, when you go and you get your license for an electric vehicle, they triple charge you for your license plate and your registration in order to kind of make up some of that funding gap. But at the end of the day, everything comes down to infrastructure finance. And I know we're not going to go down that road on this episode because that could take us down another road. But like, if we want to have better systems, if we want to have better roads, if we want to have better ways of going around, how are we going to pay for it? That's where like we can't just rely upon things like fuel taxes. We can't just rely upon things like sales taxes. We can't just rely on the government. We as the people need to get more comfortable with paying more for our fair share, whatever that is. I know a lot of people like, I already paid my fair share. You should see what my gas bill is. Well, that's fine. Then don't complain about the infrastructure. Like, don't bitch and moan about it if you feel you're already paying enough, because it is what it is. This is the system that we have here. And I kind of went on a couple tangents there, but I tried to wrap it all up there. What's my point? Electric vehicles are not the answer to everything. They are great. They're way better than combustible cars. I mean, 1,000 times better, right? Because it's better for our climate, but they don't solve the traffic the traffic solution. They don't solve the redoing of our infrastructure building to accommodate things other than the personal vehicle. We need to rethink what we want as a society for the way of getting around. If we want to, if we want to change things, if we want things to be better, if we want things to be different, then we need to think about how we're going to pay for it.
So then how might you propose that we revolutionize how we are commuting on the road if EVs are not the solution that I think was positioned to us as especially in Southern California? The way that EVs were positioned was the idea that we are solving problems and making it easier. But to your point, it doesn't address the traffic and infrastructure. Then what would you suggest would be an advancement on that front?
Great question. So I have been advocating for many years, autonomous vehicles are already here. You for the last 10 years, you can go onto YouTube and you can watch plenty of videos about autonomous vehicles, right? But a driverless car in and of itself is simply a car without a driver. Big deal. How does that solve anything? It doesn't. What we do need is to, and I'm not talking like major redoing of all of our industry. I'm talking about redoing segments of our roads, segments of our highways, segments of our already built out cities, strictly for autonomous connected vehicles. Now, these are cars that are talking to other cars, talking to infrastructure, talking to cell phones and pinging, everything all interconnected. So you get kind of this platooning, fleeting type of thing. And making that as a part of our as an option in our transportation systems. I'm talking about their own lanes, dedicated lanes away from human drivers, right? Because humans are, you know, often the problem here because not everybody's up to the level, not everybody's paying attention. But I do think that a future where they have these autonomous pods or autonomous vehicles, and that's a complement to the current public transportation system, I think is the future. Now, you know, there's some projects out there that are actually incorporating this. There's small little segments of what I'm talking about here. There's one being built for the San Jose Airport to connect the San Jose Airport to its transit system. There's one in East Contra Costa County, and this is going to happen. It's actually happening. It's just that's also going to take a mindset shift because we're like, what do you mean you're going to take away a lane from the road? What do you mean you're going to take away a piece of this infrastructure that I used to like to drive on and you're going to give it to these things? Well, do you want to just keep commuting the way you commute? Do you want things to be the same? Cool. Then things won't be the difference and all you'll do is bitch and moan and complain and say, why don't things be different? Well, it's because you don't want it to be different. So sorry, that's my thought.
Well, so in this, we'll say, ideal world of a dedicated lane for a driverless vehicle, which may or may not be an EV, right? For this autonomous,
those are pretty much all EVs. Those are all electric vehicles. That's just the way they're being built. Now, not all driverless cars are electric. Now, don't get me wrong, but you asked me, well, what is a solution? So my solution is clean. Clean has to be number one. The future, the now, it must be electric. So we need to phase out combustible engines.
Okay. And then is this, again, just trying to follow your vision, because I'm thinking about the carpool lanes, especially in Los Angeles, where we see carpool lanes, which I don't know that I've seen this anywhere, maybe Atlanta, where it's not just two people or more in the car, but it's three people or more in the car. For anybody who hasn't driven in Los Angeles, they up that in some spaces, right, to, again, mitigate the congestion and kind of upping the level. Would the proposition be that this lane would be in addition? Because I'm thinking of the 405 and how congested that always is because it's been under construction, I think, my entire life. Or is it something where they're taking these carpool lanes? And the reason where my head is going this way is because I'm thinking about how when we first launched Priuses in Southern California, the Priuses came with these tags, these carpool lane tags, so that single passenger cars would have access to these carpool lanes that were typically dedicated to two or more. Now we see that they've pulled those back because it got a little crazy for everybody, right? So they pulled those back. I don't believe they're even producing them anymore. You can only get it if it was a car from the past, and eventually in 10 years, they'll become obsolete. But is the idea that in lieu of these carpool lanes, we would have the driverless, the dedicated lanes for driverless vehicles, or is it that it would be an addition?
Yeah, great, great question. The answer is it depends. Typical lawyer answer. The students in my classes. Let's say it depends 10 times in a row. That's probably what I should say because that's all what you say all the time. It could be that the carpool lanes are quote unquote taken away and given to these dedicated lanes. It doesn't have to be. If you go and look at carpool lanes in Southern California in particular, there's usually two. Sometimes you'll see three lanes in the carpool lanes. And what's going on is a lot of these carpool lanes are now being converted to express lanes, meaning if you only have a single occupant, but you have a transponder and you're willing to pay, you can take that lane and then you pay the fee. If you have two people in there or you have three people in there, depending upon the time of the day, then it's free. But if you're a single occupant, then you can actually pay for it. Those are called express lanes. So you actually have the right to use a carpool lane if you're willing to pay for it. It could be that those all get converted to these dedicated lanes. What's interesting is the state of Michigan recently launched this connected autonomous vehicle pilot project where I think they are actually converting. I'm guessing here, so you know, don't quote me on. I think they are actually converting a lane off the highway that was a carpool lane strictly for autonomous vehicles, where these autonomous vehicles talk to the road, they talk to other cars. And I think they are doing that conversion there, or it could just be like there's just less people in Michigan and they don't have to deal with carpools. I don't actually know how it would work in Southern California. Yes, the easiest way is to convert a carpool lane because those are already kind of dedicated and separated. That would, yes, it would for sure. Or it could be in addition to.
And then when earlier you said something that, again, could do a whole nother podcast on this, but you said humans are the problem, right?
Definitely. Yes.
And I don't disagree. Whenever we come up with a solution, there will be a segment of people who can either create new problems where solutions were made or find a way to reject the solution and then create problems that way. When we start thinking about the mental shift that you mentioned and whether it is the driverless vehicles, even on the EV front and a lot of, again, the policies that are changing, we know that with the integration of technology, new problems can arise. Are there any that you anticipate or see? And I say this because I think of the movie, and I don't know if you're familiar with it, Total Recall with Arnold Schwarzenegger, where he has this taxi cab, the police RoboCop cars are their own. It's so interesting to watch today. But, you know, the driver keeps saying, like, what is your destination? And he's just like, just go anywhere that's not here. And of course, that doesn't register with the robot driver, right? But taking it a step further, what type of concerns or issues might we see with the implementation of more driverless autonomous cars? Because as we integrate more technology, we know that there's always a caveat on the other side.
Yeah, I mean, something that I've been focused on, great question, excellent question, and a great reference to a phenomenal film, Total Recall. I love it. Transportation equity is one of the first things that comes to mind, right? Because, like, if I'm here, like, oh, well, it's connected to your phone, it's connected to, you know, whatever that you got to talk to it somehow, right? Like, Uber's been great if you have a phone and you can afford it and you got a credit card and blah, blah, blah. What about people that don't have a phone? What about people that don't have a credit card? What about people that can't access Uber? Are we just going to, you know, is it going to be more and more of the haves and the have-nots, right? Like, how do we also bring the people that don't have the access that the haves have to get some equity from that new transportation option? That's the first thing that comes to mind, right? We got to think about people that should also benefit from this, even if they don't have access to it. And transportation equity is an extremely hot topic. I actually couldn't find a definition of it online, so I kind of came up with my own in one of my Forbes article, and I'm pretty happy with what I had come up with. Tell me where to go. You know, give me an address. You kind of already face that with Uber. You know, you already have to kind of have you. I got to know where you're going. So that I think most people are kind of used to that already. What about like stop? What if you need to make an emergency stop? Right? Like, what if you need to stop something along the way, but they're already in a platoon? They're already with their other vehicles going to the same place, and all of a sudden you have some emergency and you got to get out. I don't know if that's going to be available. So those are some of the things that I'm thinking will be issues in the future.
Mm-hmm. What about cybersecurity? The idea that someone hack or get into a vehicle from a terrorism standpoint, you know, looking at vehicles really could be, if you position them properly, a big old bomb. So
absolutely.
If someone can find a way to hack, we'll call it, or hijack a fleet of driverless cars, I think there, again, back to humans being the problem, like, I think that those are some considerations that might have to be, I mean, I have to imagine that those are considerations as well.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I tell you, in the last year, something that I said I was going to dedicate myself into learning a little bit more about was cybersecurity in the public space, let's just call it the public finance space. That's the space that I'm in. And I have educated myself a fair amount, and it is scary. Scary stuff, Ella. And what a lot of people, if people only knew how many attacks our utilities get, cybersecurity attacks on our security, on our water systems, on everything else, I don't think people would sleep at night. I mean, we've got great government, you know, focus on cybersecurity right now, which is really fantastic. but it's always going to be a threat. And so how serious they take protecting our utilities, they will need to do that with vehicles, because you're absolutely right. A vehicle can be weaponized very, very, very simply. Cybersecurity is just one of those things that we're just going to have to live with as a constant threat, something we always have to say, oh, but what about making this cyber secure in everything for the rest of our lives?
And then earlier you had mentioned that electric vehicles are the future. And again, coming from Southern California, I think that's a very fair statement. But relocating to Dallas, Texas, there is a strict, I mean, you can imagine, a visceral rejection of that mindset. And again, without going too deep into the politics of Texas versus California and where Texas economy lies versus California's economy and where there might be vested interest in combustible vehicles in this state, there isn't that necessarily from a cultural mindset, there isn't always that advocacy for electric vehicles. And what I hear in Texas, so it's so interesting being like an immigrant here. I'm like a California immigrant operating in Texas. Elon Musk moved here, but there's rumors he's moving back. I mean, his Tesla, when I say Elon Musk, bringing, you know, Tesla here, but I know of only one EV station, charging station, in Dallas. Well, two, if you count the Target, but that's not really practical. And so, you know, it's not the same infrastructure here, but even taking that further, one of the dialogues that I'm hearing in Texas, and I was curious about, is this idea that EVs are heavier because of the batteries. They are heavier than combustible vehicles, and therefore the infrastructure that's in place, when we look at our tollways and our highways, were made for combustible vehicles and cannot accommodate EVs. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yes, I have. In fact, I wrote about that. So there's a series of articles that I wrote in Forbes called The Dark Side of Electrification. And I specifically speak to the weight of EVs. Now, to say that they cannot accommodate, our infrastructure cannot accommodate, not true. They just are heavier. Okay. So they damage our roads a bit more than combustible engines, sometimes quite a bit more. And so that goes back to the paying of the fair share argument. These EVs, right, if they don't have some kind of a substitute for the fuel tax, so they're not paying for the roads and they're damaging the roads more, how is that fair? Now, people like to use that argument. They like to weaponize that, like, ah, forget EVs. They're horrible. They don't pay for nothing and they destroy our roads. Okay, but then let's look at all the benefits that EVs have. Let's look at the fact that greenhouse gas emissions, 29% of all greenhouse gas emissions come from transportation, right? So like 30% of all the gunk, the air pollution comes from cars. EVs contribute, you know, setting aside EV factories and setting aside all that other stuff that people try to bring up, electric vehicle itself doesn't contribute towards that, right? You know, they happen to be a lot cheaper to maintain, is from what I've heard. So like you buy an EV and there's not that much maintenance to it. So there's a lot of savings that go along with them. It's a hard debate, right? And there is, I mean, it's no secret. Texas historically has made a lot of money from oil and they're going to protect that industry. And that's fine. You know, that's entirely up to them. To each state their own. But don't forget, Texas is also one of the states that's also produced massive amounts of clean energy utilities over the past couple of years, and windmills and solar. So, like, sure, I'm sure there's a very vocal segment in Texas that wants to glom on to this EV versus gas stuff. But there's also a lot of reasonable people that see that the future is in clean tech as well. I mean, it's just true. It's just, I know that for sure.
I will say that, again, we tried to unpack in a very short period of time a really hot topic that I think is relevant. I'm excited to see how this podcast in particular ages, because I know that it really just is. I mean, it's going to be at the forefront. I think with the 2024 election, this topic of not only are the economic implications, and then furthermore, the ecosystem all together. I think it's going to be really interesting. And my biggest takeaway, I have to be honest, Rudy, is going to be that by designating a driver to someone else, it makes you a better person, because I can now say that I'm better than other people. Oh, I guess you I are. Have to say I'm better than I used to be.
You are. You
better are. Than You're I telling. Used to be.
Ella, you save money. It's good. It's good for your body. It's good for your mind. You can do more on your smartphone. You get more done. Let's be honest. You're the best. Period. Because you're not driving and you've dead and you're living with that. I'm telling you, it is a better way to live if you could pull it off. Mm-hmm. Clearly you could pull it off. Sometimes you have to rent a car, no problem. There's a lot of these car sharing options these days. It's a lot easier these days. You know, my car is kind of run down, and my wife, my friends, my parents, my friends in town, they're like, "When you get a new car? When you get a new car?" I'm like, "I'm not. I'm not. I'm gonna see how long this thing can last, and I'm gonna dedicate myself to trying to incorporate more public transportation. I've learned even more bus systems. I've learned even more ways to get around. I want to, because I'm going to tell you something. There's a huge thing. You brought up something about before the pandemic, after the pandemic. Before the pandemic, Ella, I used to be way more of a productive person. I got a lot more stuff done. As a result of the pandemic, as a result of me using public transportation less and, you know, working from home more and the such, I am a less productive person because my good daily habit of using public transportation and delegating the driving has dwindled significantly. Therefore, that has impacted my productivity. I'd like to get my productivity back.
Ooh, I love that. Well, I think that's a perfect way to close out, because I really like that. And I meant what I said about watching this podcast age a bit and see where we are in just 12 months.
Me too.
On this front. But as we close out, I like to ask every guest, because I am on a path to this CEF balance. And part of that, I will say, is the not having a car. When I relocated to Texas, a lot of people have said to me, like, "You're so much happier. What is it? What is it? What is it?" And I was struggling to find the answer, because are the people particularly nicer than home? You know, one is home, one is not, right? So there are all these factors, but I think the biggest obvious factor for me is the fact that I went from commuting 30 hours a week to prioritizing walking to get my groceries. Huge. Walking to go to bars and restaurants, prioritizing being in my community and saying hi to people I recognize in my community, including the homeless people who I now know by name because of walking and being in my community, the police officers, all of that. I think that has really created an awesome situation for my life, right? So I do think that that's helped me. And from a spiritual perspective, an emotional perspective, a financial perspective, because absolutely, I spend about $300 a month on transportation total. That's including the rental cars that I sometimes have to get, the gasoline, all of that. $300. You cannot get a new vehicle and pay for the insurance and registration with that. Like, it just can't be beat. So financially, it's a sound decision for me. And then physically, I'm getting a whole lot more exercise and fresh air. And from an EMDR perspective, if you know what that is, I'll link that in the show notes as well. Just that rapid eye movement is really great for your mental health. So from a CEF perspective, not having a car has really served me. I know that that's not applicable to everybody's life, but for you, as you look at your life, where might you have, CEF balance? Where do you feel really strong right now? And where do you feel like you could grow a little bit more?
It's a good question. I would like to get back to my daily writing habit, and I don't see how that's going to. So like, there's only 24 hours in a day. Period. There's no way I can create new time. I have to figure out ways to be more efficient with my time. And I gotta get back to delegating my transportation to the extent I can. I mean, that's commuting to work one way or the other. That's how I want to become a better person. I want to get back to my daily writing habit. That's what I would like.
I love that. That's wonderful. Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining today, Rudy, and just sharing so much of your wisdom. I know there's a lot more in that head of yours. And I really like your voice, which was the first reason why I was like, please come on my podcast, because you have an incredible voice. So I should not be surprised that you are also acting at times. But I thank you so much for coming on.
It's an honor. I thank you for everything. Thank you for all your phenomenal LinkedIn posts. You know, they're great. They're positive. They're awesome. I'll be reposting them. I'll be commenting on them. I'm so happy to have made a new friend with you, and I look forward to your continued success. And if I can help in any way, just hit me up.
Oh, thank you, Rudy.
You're welcome.
Thank you for joining us on Eavesdrop with Ella. If today's episode inspired you to pursue personal or professional growth, visit my website, ellayourbella.com, where you can find more empowering content and resources. You can also contact me directly for a consultation so we can transform your challenges into triumphs together. Until next time, this is Ella Parler reminding you to stay resilient, stay abundant, and above all, stay balanced. Subscribe, share, rate, and review this podcast to help us connect with more eavesdroppers just like you. Thank you for eavesdropping, and we'll catch you on the next episode.
You have been listening to Eavesdrop with Ella, a production of EP Consulting. Some of the products and services mentioned are paid promotions, and any advice should be confirmed with a qualified professional. Opinions and ideas are for entertainment purposes only and belong to EP Consulting. All rights reserved.
Boom!